Now, in the societies of a traditional culture, maturity is the condition of living in terms of the cultural tradition. You become the vehicle of the moral order. You enforce it, you believe it, you are it. In our culture, we have a different problem. We ask our students, we ask our children to be critical, to use their own heads. Some of them start too soon, but it's a good principle. But it leads to a very new problem in relation to our mythologies, that we do not try to make an imprinting on the person of such force that the person becomes simply a walking copy of what was there before. The idea is to develop the individual personality, and this is a very special contemporary modern Western problem. In India, the individual is expected to do exactly as has always been done in his caste. That word suti, the woman throwing herself on her husband's funeral pyre, that is from a Sanskrit word meaning to be, sat. It's the feminine form of to be. A woman who performs her duty all the way as wife is something because she is a wife. And the person who disobeys this sat, this dharma, this supporting law, is a no-thing, a sat, a nothing. This is just the opposite to our point of view. For us, the person who simply lives by authority and does exactly as told, identifying himself with his social role, is a stuffed shirt. There is no person there. This is a new problem, again, with our mythologies. Well, after you have learned to do what the culture asks you to do, suppressing within yourself those movements of the psyche that are uncongenial to the social order, the society finally finds it doesn't want you anymore. This happens very early. And then you have to find the way out. Now, these are two very important crises. One, becoming grown up, and the other, letting the world drop. And the mythological order has to take care of these. As for growing up, of course, if you go through for a PhD, you're not going to get out from under the authorities until you're about 45 years old. And then you'll never get out. And you can always tell an author who is still working under the authorities by the number of footnotes he provides to his text. You must have the courage of your own statements and belief and leave it to somebody else to find who your authority was. Now compare, for instance, when you hear on the TV a professor talking, answering questions. He will very often be humming and hawing and you just wonder, well, does he have the idea or what's stopping him? But then when you have a baseball player consulted, he answers very easily. He speaks with authority, speaks with ease. I've been impressed by this. He got out from under the authorities when he was the best pitcher in the sandlot at the age of 17 or 18. But the poor professor was working under authorities until he was about 45, and now it's just too late. Now it's time for him to go out the door entirely. The business of going out. As I say, you just begin to know what the culture expects of you and are able to do it pretty well when you begin to fumble. Back aches, things hurt, and young people are doing it much better. In fact, we've got new ways of doing it now, so we can't use you at all. What are you going to do with these people? Well, there's a little story I once heard about Barnum & Bailey's circus. They used to have a special tent for the freak show. You'd pay 50 cents or so to go in and see the freaks, and you'd see all these signs. There'd be a sign, the bearded lady, the fat man, and all this sort of business. There were so many things to see that people were not going out, and the tent was filling up, filling up, filling up. This became a problem. What do you do with people who won't go out? Somebody had the wonderful idea to take down the exit sign and put up a sign that said, to the grand egress. And then everybody went to see the grand egress. Well, we have a little story like that to help people die. You're going to go out the door, and it's going to be simply wonderful out there. There are going to be harps to play. Everybody's going to meet you, and so on. Now, it's a basic mythological principle, I would say, when you translate mythology into psychology, that what is referred to in mythology as other world is really inner world. And what is spoken of as future is now. I once overheard the clergyman at an Anglican wedding ceremony say to the couple something like this: live your life in such a way that you will merit eternal life in the future. And I thought, well, that's putting it wrongly. Live your life, your marriage, in such a way that you will experience your eternal life now. Because eternity is not a long time. Eternity is not future or past. Eternity is a dimension of now. It's a dimension of the human spirit, which is eternal. And find that eternal dimension in yourself, and you will ride on time throughout your existence. And what helps to reflect eternity to you are these mythological archetypes, these symbols that live in all the mythologies of the world and which have been the support of human beings forever. The four functions: the mystical, the cosmological, the sociological, the psychological. In our present world, the cosmological and the sociological have been taken away from us. Our image of the cosmos is totally different from that of the religious traditions in which we've been brought up, and the social order is totally different from what it was in the days when these laws of Moses and so forth were composed. We think of morality as something that human beings can judge. Change in circumstance, the moral order changes. In my lifetime, it has changed enormously. These are practical and scientific and psychological problems which are riding, whether you like it or not, on their own. But the basic psychological problems of youth, maturity, and age, and death, and the mystical problem of the mystery of the universe, these remain. And so it is largely from the psychological standpoint that one can reinterpret, re-experience, and reuse the traditions which science and the new moralities seem to have taken away.